I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to season 9 of the Parenting Aces podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, coming at you from Southern California, where we are in the midst of a heat wave yet again. It's October, but it's hot as all get out here. But nonetheless, no complaints on my end. I'm loving being out here and am thrilled to have the opportunity to speak with y'all again. And this week, I have the opportunity to chat with a fellow tennis parent about her daughter's development, her pathway, the growth that they've seen, the choices that they've made as a family for her daughter's tennis training and development. And so I think you're going to find what Polly Schulte has to say very interesting, very eye-opening, and enlightening. And that said, let me just quickly go over a couple things. For those of you listening to this podcast on one of the podcast apps, if you want to watch the video version, come on over to our YouTube channel and you can watch us in video over there or on parentingaces.com. We have the video on there as well. And also just want to let y'all know that if you're not following us on our social media channels, I would love for you to join in the conversation. We have lots of lively chats going on our Facebook page and Facebook group, as well as on Instagram and Twitter. And we'd love to have you join us over there and come see what it's all about and take advantage of having a community of tennis parents and tennis coaches that are more than happy to share their opinions and their experiences with the rest of us. Also, one other thing, I have been making some tweaks to the parentingaces.com website, so I'd love your feedback on what you think. We've rearranged some things, changed some of the layout, and I'm always up for feedback. So please chime in with that. You can always reach me, Lisa at parentingaces.com, or you can comment through the website or on all of our socials, DM me, whatever, I'm here. And lastly, if you haven't joined us as a premium member yet, I would love to have you do that as well. We are offering now, as part of our premium membership, quarterly consults. So if you have questions, you want to have an in-depth conversation about your child's tennis development, whether they're just starting out or whether they're making a leap from one level to the next or whether they're entering the college recruiting process, I'm here for you and would love to help you through that. All right, all that business out of the way, I want to bring Polly Schulte on, and I'm just going to unmute her and add her here. Polly, good morning. You're in Florida. I'm in California. Where are you? You're in Kentucky. I don't know why I had Florida in my head. You're in Kentucky. I'm in California. We're dealing with a bit of a time difference, but no biggie. We made it work. And welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So you have a daughter, Margaret, who is 12 years old, just turned.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about how Margaret got started playing tennis and where she is and what her goals are for her tennis.
So she started doing sports at age 4, and it was swimming. She did country club swim team. I think she was in 6 and unders for 3 years, and she was really good. She was winning right away at age 4, some of the meets, and showed a lot of athleticism and just a competitive spirit. We continued with swimming, and then once she got into elementary school, we also did field hockey and soccer. And then introduced, when she was around 6, country club tennis. And she did, she liked it. We introduced it to her right toward the end of the summer. And here at our country club in Louisville, we don't have indoor courts at our club. So I had to figure out, she liked it and said she wanted to keep doing it. So I had to figure out where to put her because, for an indoor court environment, and was able to do that. We ended up with a great first coach. In fact, she started teaching me because I wanted to be able to hit with the kids. Both, I have 2 daughters, a 14-year-old at the time was 8 and 6. We started hitting with Jan, and then Jan started teaching me. So it started to become like a family thing. And both of my kids at the time really liked tennis. And then I became obsessed with it, quite frankly.
Good. I love when that happens.
I started playing every single day. I mean, it kind of got crazy. and just started, you know, watching the pros and anything I could get my hands on about tennis, I would read and study. And it became clear that my older child was not, just in general, she's not an athlete and she doesn't like competition. She played a couple matches, hated it, came off the court crying. We didn't force it on her. And we, you know, she's moved on to other things. However, Margaret really, really liked it. In fact, we were doing indoor swimming at the time, you know, winter swimming, which is obviously indoor. Mm-hmm. And she didn't like that for a bunch of reasons. It had to do with just the chemicals in the pool. And like she come out feeling like she was going to throw up. So she told me she wanted to start doing tournaments. And I didn't even know she knew what that word was. So I started researching. And this was more like the next year when she was around eight. Okay. And I found a lady that focuses on 10 and under 10 tournament, you know, tournaments for beginners. And her name's Tammy Anderson. She's kind of this, you know.
I know Tammy really well.
Do you really? Okay. Yes. So we found Tammy. And
she's amazing.
Was yeah, she was great. So imagine Tammy, you know, having your kid with Tammy, who's got this great nurturing personality.
Yes.
She was so cute with the kids, like, you know, she would hold up a whiteboard on how to keep score and what to put in your backpack for the tournament and what snacks are important, you know, all this stuff. And it was just a blast. So those first couple of years really kind of got my daughter. She found a love for tennis, and I owe a lot to Tammy for that. And then from there, so she specializes in green, orange and green ball. When we decided it was time for Margaret to get off green ball, she was to move to a different coach, because that's how they kind of did it here in Louisville, especially with Tammy. She doesn't want to teach yellow ball and the higher level kids.
Okay.
So we moved to a coach that promised the world to us and gave us nothing. I'll have to say. And it was really disappointing, honestly. You know, he said that he was going to create, there was like a group of girls at the time that were all the same level and they were all focusing on tennis and they wanted to move on to yellow ball and get, you know, start doing like 12 and under tournaments in the South and all this. And he promised that he would take, you know, he would create this little academy and take the kids and he would, you know, focus the lessons on with videos and all this stuff. Once we got involved, it wasn't the case at all. Mm-hmm. And so we, I don't know what happened. Honestly, I really don't know what happened. To this day, I don't know if he changed his mind but didn't tell us, but we wasted time, in my opinion. And because we were rushing after school every day to take these kids to these things, but all they were doing was just hitting balls. Like, there was no method to the madness on the court. And even me, not having a lot of coaching background or really understanding training at the time, I could tell that it was kind of worthless. So, but the one mistake I made is I didn't pull Margaret out faster. You know, we kind of did it from in August all the way until the following June. We stuck it out with him.
Can I ask you, was she having fun during that time? Was she with friends? And
she was having fun. But what I noticed is we started, you know, going to tournaments and stuff, not really high. Actually, there were still local tournaments at that time. Mm-hmm. But still tournaments, you know, and she wasn't having results.
Mm-hmm.
So to her, that's not fun. You know, right. So for as much work as we were putting in, I felt like things should have been going a little better.
Got it.
So, but yeah, she was definitely having fun because the girls that she was hitting with at the time are still her best friends and they still hit a lot together. So that's good.
Did you feel like during that time that she would was the coach talking to you about a developmental plan or none of that? And it wasn't like, basically, you know, sometimes,
go ahead.
Well, sometimes kids, you know, when they're learning new skills, when they're starting to develop new strokes or new tactics or whatever, the results are not where anybody wants them, but it's just part of, you know, we have to go through this to get to that next stage. But you're saying that's not what was going on.
I think when I got frustrated, we had been with him. It was like August of, I can't remember which year, 2018. And then come December, we were getting ready for one of the Louisville hosts, some Southern yeah. tournaments. Yeah. So, and they do the indoor, they used to call them Icy Hots.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time there.
Yeah. So we were getting ready to do one of those. And her backhand just was not developing. And so I asked this coach, it was after a practice, and I said something to him like, what's up with her backhand? And he got real sarcastic and he goes, well, there's all kinds of problems with it. You know, and I said, oh, okay, let's start with number one problem. He goes, oh, it's her grip. And I'm like, okay, number two and three. And he kind of got sarcastic and said, you know, two and three. And I said, well, why aren't you dealing with that? And I kind of got, you know, I was a little mad. I was like, why aren't we dealing with this? And he goes, well, because right now we're working on her forehand, you know? And I'm like, okay, that's fair. Not knowing, you know, just kind of, okay. So I said, okay. So then what happened? There was a girl, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but there was a girl in the group that moonballed another girl in the group in the tournament. Okay. Uh-huh. Which he told the kids, he said, if I ever catch you all moonballing, you're out of the group, period. Cause he didn't want to train them that way. And I respected that. And of course the kids did too. Uh-huh. So it happened. And then there were some other things that happened with this kid. Basically this kid became a bad apple, and there was cheating and crazy parents and all this stuff. And so basically this coach just abandoned, he kept the lessons going, but in his mind, he had given up, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. And he kicked this kid out. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it was like all this drama. I've never seen drama like that among adults in my life. So he kept the kids going. And I really wished at that time he would have just said, you all need to go find, you know, another coach, and you need to start, and I'll help you. But instead he kept the lessons going without any motivation or drive to like make it happen. Does that make sense? So that's kind of in a nutshell what happened. And I felt like it was to the detriment of the kids, and we were all kind of left high and dry. And then, you know, but we stuck it out till June. Another thing about Louisville is like, in the winter, you know, it goes into indoor tennis. So right. it's really hard to switch in the middle of the season to a different coach because they're all booked up and, you know, everything's all booked up.
Right.
And these kids are not homeschooled. So it, you know, we were kind of stuck until spring. Gotcha. And then, but sure enough, once spring came, we found another coach. We worked hard to figure out what to do, and we did. So, and that coach was okay. Once spring came, I started researching stuff on your Parenting ACEs because I knew that I wanted to send her to a camp of some sort. And so I found a lot of information on your website and ended up sending her to an academy, which that's a whole nother story. That's not interesting, but basically same story you've probably heard before, with a lower level kid. She got no attention. I sent her to an academy the summer of 2019. And she came back really, really stressed out. And I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened to this day. I felt like that was the beginning of her anxiety that she can experience on the court still to this day. But it is getting better. And she liked it. You know, we actually sent her back for fall break. And then, but you know, after she came back, she was doing some tournaments. It was an academy in South Carolina.
Okay.
And when she came back, come fall, we had to deal with indoor tennis. Like all the programs move indoor around October. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a coach that was like asking me to put together a group, like find all the highest level 12s. And so I tried to get all these kids. And you know, it basically ended up a disaster, this group that we tried to create, because once we moved indoors here in Louisville, the owner wanted more kids on the court than what the coach had promised me. He promised me no more than four. And then within 2 weeks of, you know, the group having started, there was sometimes eight kids on the court. Mm-hmm. And so I confronted the coach and I'm like, I thought you told me it was only four. And he goes, oh, well, that's what I hoped. But my boss said, we can't do that. You know? And I'm like, well, then I need to take my kid. It was worthless. I mean,
it's expensive. Indoor tennis is really expensive.
Not only is it expensive, but it's prime time. I mean, it's right. You know, 4 to 6 after school. And I needed to go find something else. So then I started listening to your podcasts, and I stumbled upon, you know, a lot of Todd's podcasts. And it was at a time.
Todd being Todd Whittem. Throw that out there.
Yeah. And it was at a time when we were really frustrated with everything, you know, just the lack of results, the lack of improvement. Mm-hmm. With all the work that we were putting in, I was not seeing her improve. period. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, you know, figure out what to do. Yeah.
And at that time, what was Margaret telling you she wanted for her tennis?
So her goals were very lofty. You know, they
She was 11 at the time.
She told me she wanted to go pro. I had taken her because I love tennis so much. And, you know, she, like, we have the Cincinnati tournament right near us.
Yeah.
So we've been going to that every year, watching like Roger Federer play in the final and Simona Halep play in the final and Serena Williams. And we've gone to the U.S. Open before. So, you know, she's been exposed to seeing how this is. And so her goal is to go pro, you know, and meanwhile, in the back of my head, I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're at the rate we're going, you know,
right.
her other goal, which I think is a little more realistic, is to do college tennis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a definite goal, you know?
Okay.
And you know, obviously she would like to do D1 and she throws Stanford out there or Virginia. But again, you know, we've got work to do and we got to keep finding the right path.
Right. And she's 12. So you do have time. Yeah. Right. Okay. So you were looking for a new coaching situation. You stumbled upon Todd and his podcast that we did together.
Yeah.
And so how did you initiate contact with him and how did things kind of, what was the progression there?
Well, the podcasts that stood out to me the most were about foundation and then also the business behind tennis. He's done quite a few with you, but he talks a lot about foundation. There was one that really hit me hard. It was about point construction. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do.
But I remember Margaret had no ability whatsoever to construct a point, even if she tried. And, you know, again, I wasn't really sure why. And honestly, when I contacted Todd, I really wasn't, this sounds really kind of silly, but I wasn't sure if Margaret had a good foundation or not. That's kind of,
well,
I mean, I know
we play
tennis, you know, she can hit a forehand and a backhand. She can move well, you know, she can serve, she can all that. So does she have a good foundation? I really didn't know. Okay. So those were the ones that really struck me. And one thing he said that really made sense to me was if the child can't hit a target, then they can't construct a point. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is common sense, but you don't hear coaches talk that way a lot. Okay.
Right.
At least not here in Louisville. So I was reluctant to contact him just because obviously Margaret had just turned 11 and then, you know, and I felt like, well, it's clear that he only does small groups. So they're probably really high level. So she doesn't have a lot of experience with this training, but then I was also very, I felt a huge sense of urgency to contact him at the same time because she is only 11 and he talks a lot about having to fix kids late in the game. Mm-hmm. And so my big thing was, why not just contact him? He can tell me no, you know?
Right.
But because I don't want her to be that kid that has to be fixed late in the game, you know? So I called him, I think I emailed him first. He called me back and, you know, I just said, you know, basically I want to talk to you and see how you handle kids at this age. And he said, well, bring her down. And I'm like, oh, really? You know, really bring her down. And he said, yes. And
I'm just putting his website up
for
people that are interested. That's how you get in touch with him. twtennis.com. So sorry, go ahead.
Basically, he assured me it would be fine. Her level did not matter because they have a full-time hitting coach. The coaching is basically private if you want it to be. And then he does an assessment, you know, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I warned him of Margaret's attitude. Margaret's, one of her big struggles is she has a weak attitude. She is very immature on the court. She can get frustrated very easily. She's never mean to her opponent, thank goodness. I've never seen that before, but she definitely can throw her racket and she's very passionate. So therefore she can get frustrated easily. He kind of said, don't worry about that. Just bring her down. So we did. And then, you know, we had our first experience down there, which, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so talk about that. So you make the decision to take your child down to Florida to meet with a coach who you've talked to on the phone. You've heard multiple podcasts. And did y'all go over a school break or was it the summer?
Yeah, we went over President's Day weekend.
Okay. So
she missed a couple days of school. So we went
So that's February, indoor training season where you are, but prime outdoor season down in Florida.
So we went down there, and the first experience was her assessment with Todd. And it was interesting because, like I said, I wasn't even sure if she had a good foundation or not. But as soon as she started hitting with him, because of the way they were hitting, it was loud and clear how poor her foundation was. And that, and what I mean by that is, they do targets, you know, where they hit forehands and backhands on a target. So they're very simple. They're like, if you're going to do forehand cross court, the target's back in the corner on the other side, about 3x3. And then the forehand down the line is the same. The targets are always the same. You've got the each corner. So she couldn't hit the target to save her life. And it was that simple. And so because she had never hit that way here in Louisville, where they've never, you know, drilled like that, it was clear to me. It was only clear to me then. Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
And
you're lucky it became clear at 11 instead of at 16, which was my experience. So,
Good. So, thank you. also, she hit everything open stance, which is not good only because, I mean, open stance is pretty common once you get to the higher level.
Right.
However, when you're 11, if that's the only way you know how to hit, that's really bad because they're not taught open stance properly. So she's
and it puts a lot of stress on the body. Yeah. It's a lot harder to hit open stance.
Right. And but she was never taught open stance. Nobody taught her open stance. They just, you know, she
didn't
just
stop her.
She just fell into an open stance because she didn't know how to move, if that makes sense. So she was, you know, landing on her back foot, hitting the ball behind her. Therefore, she has no control over where she's hitting it, you know. And so I was a little overwhelmed when I saw all this so clear, you know, it's kind of, it was both things. It was, I was upset, but then at the same time I was relieved because she's only 11.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and so what was Todd's, you know, when they came off the court after this assessment, what happened next? Did he have a conversation with you? Did he have a conversation with Margaret, with both of you together?
Kind of a brief conversation. It wasn't anything. I mean, I think we both knew, you know, he said, he often will consult Pierre immediately. And well, basically he had the assessment. We saw that she struggled. There was no doubt. So, you know, and then Pierre comes because Margaret did the assessment with him at 8 a.m. And then people don't really show up there until about 9:15 or 9:30. So all the kids roll in and Pierre rolls in. And she,
Pierre Arnold, who worked with Todd and who developed Todd. He was Todd's coach.
And so he hit with Margaret the rest of the day. She wasn't really mixed in with the group until maybe the following day, but certainly the first day she hit with only Pierre. And then she did the fitness. They did physical fitness. At that time, they actually had four courts where they had like a tiebreaker court. They had live ball drill court, then they had bucket drill court, and then they had the fitness court. And the kids were kind of rotating through these four courts. And the fitness court was set up by Daniel Yu, who is another coach of Todd's.
Yeah.
Also trained with Todd, also trained under Pierre. And he sets up these stations on the court where they have, like, you know, agility training with ladders. They have bands, all the tennis-specific strength training drills, no weights. But just, you know, all those different types of exercises, and they're pretty grueling. Trust me. Oh my
God. Oh yeah. I've seen the videos.
So you can only imagine what I'm throwing this child into. So Margaret goes through the assessment there was, I don't recall there being drama with Todd. I mean, maybe a little bit, but nothing, you know, crazy.
You mean on her end?
On her end. Yes. And, but then once she started hitting with Pierre, I mean, all hell broke loose. Excuse me.
That's okay. So, I mean, so what do you mean by that? Like, no drama with Todd, no drama with the fitness.
Pierre's awesome. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He's got all my respect.
He's a sweetheart.
Yeah. What I mean by that is that the way they do their drills are tough. So you've got a cone that's like 2 feet behind the center of the baseline. Mm-hmm. And the kids are literally running around the cone.
Right.
And then they're being fed a ball. So,
right.
And then Pierre has a goal for the kids. He'll say, you have to do 3 rounds of 10 where you have to hit the target 10 times for three rounds. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, when you have a kid that has no foundation and can't hit the target, that's right. Wrong. So she's running around the cone and can't hit the target and getting completely frustrated. She doesn't have the concentration skills. She doesn't have the good attitude. She's putting the effort in. She's definitely doing that. But between the attitude and the concentration, what happens with her is just once she can't do what she's trying to do, her brain is taken over by anxiety and just, you know, all the self-doubt and the bad, you know, I can't do this, banging racket. So then you really.
And again, just a reminder to those of you listening, she was 11. So yeah. It's not like she's 16.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
a child and she's still maturing and she's still learning these things. Yeah. And at 11, I don't know how it is in your family, but puberty is starting likely. Yeah, there's definitely. A lot of hormone yeah. stuff.
All that.
It's 11 years old for girls is it's rough.
But by this point, I was also fed up with her attitude. I'm going to tell you,
when
I took her down to Todd's, I was like, somebody help me. And they have a very militaristic style. They're very disciplinarian.
Yeah.
Pierre calls it militaristic. If you show a bad attitude, there will be consequences. And this is something I had never done really with Margaret, I'll be honest. And so, she starts going through this, becoming exhausted, can't hit the target. He's, you know, Pierre never got mad at her for missing a shot. Okay, mm-hmm. So I will tell you that. Never have I seen him get mad at a kid ever for missing. What he does get upset with is if they have a bad attitude, if they start whining. Each kid has their thing. A kid
sure.
could check out, you know, they could check out and give up. Well, Margaret just gets upset. Mm-hmm. So he figured out quickly what her demons are, as he calls them. And he would punish her or basically make her do frog jumps or push-ups or run around the tennis center, stop what she's doing, which only makes him more tired and more
right.
upset. So when I say all hell broke loose, there was definitely drama. I've got some videos that are hilarious. And, you know, I know. And, like, she cried to me at one point, came up to me, started crying, said, I want to go home. And I said, you can't go home today, but if you want to get on a plane and leave tomorrow, we'll talk about that tonight, is what I told her. Mm-hmm. I said, we're going to stay today, you know? And so she just looked at me like, okay. And toward the end of the day, it started getting a little bit better where she was actually hitting the target. Sometimes she would have to moonball or do stuff like that, but we didn't care, you know, just figure out how to hit the target. I think she felt a little bit better about what was going on. She was seeing that she's better off concentrating and trying to figure out from a technique and a movement standpoint how to hit the target. That was what was going to help her.
Mm-hmm. And you know, what's jumping out at me, Polly, as you're saying all this stuff is, you know, sometimes it takes a day like that where the kid is pushed to his or her limit, you know, what they can handle emotionally, psychologically, they break down, they cry, you know, say, I want to quit, whatever it is. And it takes that sometimes for them to kind of see the light, for the fog to clear, and for them to realize, okay, wait, this is what I said I want from my tennis. My parents are providing this opportunity for me to get training to allow me to achieve that goal that I said I want.
Yep.
And either I take advantage of it and I get to do this thing that not everybody gets to do,
right.
or I have to give up on my goal and, you know, admit to myself that maybe I'm not as committed as I thought I was, or maybe I don't love this as much as I thought. And it's okay, whichever way that goes. But I feel like for a lot of kids, I mean, I remember my son was 13 when it happened. I mean, no. 12 when it happened for him, same kind of thing, this emotional, like, what if I'm never good enough? What if I'm doing all this stuff and I'm never, you know, and sometimes it just takes that for them to kind of exhale, let go of that anxiety and say, all right, I'm ready to buckle down and do what it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, So, yeah, I mean, that was, and it was also huge for me too, to see kind of, I don't know, it was really emotional few days, because I was seeing, it was hard for me to see, okay, this is what is out there here in Florida, but we can't commit to moving down here. That's not possible with my husband's job. Plus I have an older daughter. What am I going to do? Like, you know, what am I going to do? Cause this doesn't exist in Louisville. Hate to say it, but it doesn't.
And you feel a bit helpless, right?
Yeah.
You feel like I'm not doing everything I could do for my kid. I want to do everything, but there are these other factors that have to come into play.
Right.
I mean, you know, a lot of families just don't have that choice.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, basically it was very clear that Margaret needs help with her foundation on basic shots. And they didn't work a whole lot on anything else for the rest of the trip. So they basically worked on serves, backhands, and forehands, hitting targets. They did definitely mix her in with the group a little bit here and there. And I think that just, I saw Margaret play the best she had ever played up until that day with the group because of the pressure. But, you know, it was definitely, she was not at the level of these kids. Now, I will say during that time, there were no visitors. It was all his full-time kids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Margaret understood that. I mean, she knew that in the summer there would probably be, you know, kids that were like her that were coming to train. But, yeah.
But did she feel like it was like she was being given a gift to be on the court with these kids who weren't doing this full-time training? And now I get to feel what that feels like. I get to be on the other side of the net from them. I get to see their attitude. I get to see the way they approach their training.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the kids need that. They need that kind of.
I mean, there's a whole culture down there that she had never experienced
before. Right.
And so that's definitely eye-opening. There's no doubt. And I think she also saw, wow, if I train like this, I can be as good as they are.
Right.
You know? So the next few days we did the same thing, and she mainly hit with Pierre the whole time.
Okay.
And the good news about what I walked away with was these drills are really simple, much more simple than the fancy stuff they try to do here in Louisville in a 1 hour lesson. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, as much as I knew the onus was on me to, you know, get her in a position to train like that in Louisville, I also knew that it wouldn't be that hard, because really we could do, at least for where she was at her level and her foundation, we could do a lot of it on a ball machine. And and we did, you know, so basically we came back to Louisville with a whole, you know, like, okay, here's what we're going to do. I was going to get her regularly doing a lot of those off-court fitness drills. And then the whole, you know, the drills that they did with the forehands, backhands, and just do them every day. You know, Pierre said, do them every day. He kind of had a whole list of what we needed to do. One of them that was really eye-opening was don't do tournaments for 4 months. He said he didn't want her doing tournaments, period. Take her out. He said that is not helping her. And that was a rude awakening for me too, because, you know, it's fun for us. It's become a lifestyle. We love to go to tournaments. We have, you know, friends, we have friends in South Carolina, Georgia, you know, Tennessee, all of it. So I was like, oh gosh, we got to do that. Okay. And I didn't even tell Margaret. I didn't tell her. I didn't want to, her week was hard enough. I wasn't going to be like, we can't do tournaments. But I was going to stick to that. I felt like he was right. I think I fell into the trap of, you hear so many parents say, well, the tournaments will make them better players. And I thought that, but it wasn't happening. I mean, we've done enough tournaments to prove that already without Pierre telling us. But were
y'all caught up in the ranking point chasing and that kind of stuff a little bit too?
I hate to admit it, but yeah, I mean,
I mean, you're not any different than anybody else.
Yeah,
you know,
I wasn't deliberately caught up into it, but I think subconsciously, yes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're checking rankings every week, you're checking UTR and of course. So, yeah. So, I mean, listen, I'm all about saying I screwed this up. I screwed this up. I screwed this up. So was Margaret buying into all of this? You know, Pierre saying you have to do this every day, this every day, this every day.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times the kids will push back a little bit, but she was buying into it. She trusted him.
Never been a problem. Effort with her. I'm gonna be, you know, for effort has never been a problem with Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
And attitude and, you know, being able to focus and things like that because of her attitude, those are problems. And mm-hmm. and I am seeing improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But she has never once complained about doing any of this stuff. Now, she will say one thing. We did have kind of a rude awakening recently, and we can get into this, you know, as we've progressed with Todd and Pierre. But she decided that this training was very, very difficult one day. And was exhausted and was crying. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, if you want to revisit your goals, we had a conversation about this. Like I said, I bet you didn't know it was going to be this hard when you know, when you had originally set up your goals. And she slept on it. And I said, we don't have to decide tonight. Obviously not a good idea to decide tonight. And with, you know, within a few days after that, we're back on track training the way, you know, we've been training, nothing changed
mm-hmm.
as far as, but it's hard. I mean, it's well,
and you bring up a really important point, and this is something I've talked about before as well. You have to have those conversations with your child, and you have to make them revisit their goals periodically. And by periodically, I'm thinking like quarterly or at minimum twice a year. Revisit those goals, recommit to the goals and to what it's going to take to achieve them, because otherwise you're both spinning your wheels and it leads to that headbutting that often happens between parents and children, right? So yeah. I think it's awesome that y'all had the conversation and that, you know, she had the maturity to understand that if these are my goals, you know, if I'm saying this is what I want, then I have to commit to doing all of these things that Pierre's laid out for me, or else I'm not going to get there.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's awesome.
And it's been good for me to see too, because it's funny, like, you know, I have a husband who's an entrepreneur and has worked really hard, and I've had to watch how hard that's been for him. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's helped me never get on him for not being around or anything like that.
Yeah.
With my daughter, it's the same thing. I mean, I see how hard this is. And would I have done this at age 12? No, I wouldn't have. I was a different bird. So I don't put pressure on her anymore. It's mm-hmm. like since we've been introduced to this type of training, the pressure that I put on her is slowly but surely becoming eliminated, which is mm-hmm. good.
Because she's taking on the burden herself, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to still be there. I mean, I've got to, you know,
you're her mom
financially, and I've got to, you know, travel with her, and I've got to, you know, put together schedules and whatnot. But I feel like Todd has helped me a lot with that. There's no doubt. I mean, I've been very open with him about how our family dynamic is. And then, you know, as we can get into later in the podcast, or we can get into it now, Pierre actually came and stayed at our house and mm-hmm. lived with us for 5 weeks. And he said, well, within 2 days, I know your family dynamic. Now, it's nothing horrible or dysfunctional, but there's definitely.
You have two girls that are teenagers. Yeah. Say no more. Been there, done that.
Yeah. But so we came back. And that was last February. And then, as you know, COVID happened. And, you know, gosh, that was weird. But at the same time, it was really a benefit to Margaret's tennis. I hate to say it, but it's true. I think I've heard a lot of tennis parents say this, at least parents that had somewhat of an access to a court,
mm-hmm.
which we did. So we started doing, you know, Todd's system got shut down and he had time on his hands. So he started doing FaceTime videos with Margaret with a ball machine on a court. And just, you know, that just took off too, because it was like 3 times a week. And basically, you know, they were able to really continue the momentum that we had down in Florida, here in Louisville. And it sounds, you know, at first when the idea was presented to me, let's do an iPod, we put an iPod on a tripod and put it behind Margaret. And then, you know, the balls were fed. We had targets on the court. I thought it would be silly and not work, but it really did work. You know, it did. And it worked out great. And we did it about three times a week for about 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, she started doing a lot of match play with kids around town. All these kids had free
time. Was the FaceTime stuff, was that before Pierre came down or, yes. or I guess yeah, came this, up?
Yeah, no, Pierre came recently. He just left recently. So
oh, okay.
For the whole month of September.
Gotcha.
Which okay. we can talk about that too. But this was before summer. This was basically the month of April and the beginning of May.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Todd went back to work, so we didn't have his time, but we continued the work. You know, mm-hmm. We'd do a couple here and there. But then we went down to Florida June 4th.
Okay.
That's when we went for 2 weeks. And she did the training again. And that it was a little bit different just because he had a whole lot more kids that were coming. So,
well, and that's what he told me, that, you know, because tennis was shut down in so much of the country and because he had access to courts, he was getting a lot of kids traveling down to him, you know, that weren't able to get training elsewhere or match yeah. play even.
Yeah. So that was really good. And there were younger kids that were Margaret's level that she could do matches with, which was great. Mm-hmm. So it was great. She loved it. There was still drama with Pierre, but good drama. I mean, Pierre is really good at pinpointing what like the mental weaknesses are with a kid. Mm-hmm. And we could probably name five different scenarios right now, but hers were very obvious and he had no tolerance for it. And a couple times they would butt heads, but then, you know, there was a couple times where she walked straight to her bag, I'm leaving. And then I would say, okay, come on, let's go. Let's go get in the car. Come on, let's go. And then she would just kind of look around at everybody and she would look up at me and then she'd go back to the baseline and get ready.
With the eye roll, I'm sure.
So, yeah. And then she'd start hitting and then it would be amazing the rest of the day. It was a pattern. It was yeah. a pattern that is still a little bit there, quite frankly.
And I'm guessing in my non-expert, but tennis mom expert opinion that it was probably triggered by exhaustion too. Yeah. Like, yeah. you know, I'm sure if you look back, it was at a certain point in the training day where maybe she hadn't eaten for a little bit, or maybe she, you know, hadn't had a break or, they get mentally exhausted, they get physically exhausted, and then it just kind of all goes downhill from there.
Margaret's trigger is when the balls are not hitting the target perfectly. She does mm-hmm. not have patience with herself. Mm-hmm. She has none. She wants it to hit perfectly every single time. And I hope she can overcome that. I see glimpses of her overcoming it. But right now, she's a perfectionist tennis player, and that's not a good mix.
Well, I think it's tough for the kids because, you know, it's not until they're older that they can watch the pros and start seeing the errors that the pros are making and realize, okay, this person's been training for, yeah. you know, 20 something years, yeah. you know, is making a living playing the sport and they miss the short ball long too, or miss the short angle wide or whatever yeah. it is, you know, they're not making every single ball either. And it's always interesting to me to listen to the commentators, especially when they're talking about serves and, you know, if the serve misses the target and then the return is hit for a winner. And, you know, to think yeah, yeah. that we expect our 12-year-old child to be able to hit that serve perfectly when we're looking at a Serena or a Simona or a Rafa missing the target sometimes too and getting burned yeah. on the return. So yeah. why on earth would we think that a 12-year-old can do this every single time?
Well, and, I don't, but for some reason she right. thinks she should. I don't right. know why.
Because she's 12 and that's what she thinks, and she'll, you know, she'll grow out of that. But it's funny that you bring that up, because I think that's a common thing with these kids. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons I think it's a personality trait that brings them into an individual sport like tennis, right? Because yeah. they have full control, they think, over yeah. what's going on out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. You so don't have control in tennis. There's only a few things I think you have control over, but
control the controllables. That's the phrase, but yeah.
So, so she spent a total of 5 weeks there last summer. We did two different trips. We did one in June for 2 weeks. And then we actually, I wasn't sure when I first planned the 2-week trip in June, if we, you know, if and when we would come back, and mm-hmm. it went so well. I think within a few days, I called Todd and I'm like, can we get a trip in July going? And can we make it, you know, we made a 3-week trip. And actually my husband came down. He's not a tennis player. Mm-hmm. He came down and he was so impressed by it. He was the one, he said, well, we got to get her back here in July, which I thought was a huge compliment to everybody. You know, sure. That's so hard, you know? And so I was like, really, are you okay with that? And he said, oh yeah, we got to get her back. And I said, well, let's do these 2 weeks. And he goes, no, let's do 3 weeks. You know, my husband said that. So I was like, okay. So we did. And, you know, and it was just more of the training is now becoming ingrained in her, which mm-hmm. is a beautiful thing. It really is, because this training is really, in my opinion, I have 100% faith in it.
And what are you seeing in terms of Margaret's behavior and personality off the tennis court since she started working with them? Because I, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is tennis is kind of a microcosm for life, and these kids are learning life lessons that translate into life off the court.
I mean, she's very confident. She does a lot of fitness now, and I don't even have to ask her physically. She carries herself very well. As far as having conversations with her, I feel like she's a lot more mature. We can discuss things on a different level. I don't know if it's from, I guess it's from the training, but also the schooling. She's really organized with her time right now, because now that school's back, we're trying to keep this training going, which has become a challenge with the amount of hours that she was used to playing tennis.
Yeah.
And now with school, it's just like, we know we can't play that many hours, but we can still be efficient. You know, there's efficiency.
Is she doing virtual school, or is she in an actual classroom?
Well, she's actually in a brick and mortar school.
Okay.
And it was virtual up until September 28th.
Okay.
And so you can opt virtual. Or you can go into the classroom. And right now she's going in the classroom just to be with her friend. Because Pierre was here and we were totally virtual. I think there was like a week there where she was virtual and the rest of the kids were in school. But because Pierre was here, we stayed virtual. But right now she's going to school. And we are actually, I've spoken with the school about having a flexible schedule where we don't have to attend PE and we don't have to attend study halls or... there's a fine art block. We're not doing the fine art block, and the school's okay with that. So I actually can pick her up early quite a bit, or she'll have breaks in the day where I can go get her and she'll, you know, come do some training and then go back to school.
So is she in sixth grade?
She's in sixth grade. Yes.
Okay. So middle school.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have a school that's luckily very flexible.
You are lucky.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the 5 weeks that Pierre was living with you and what those days look like. And we've got about a little more than 10 minutes left. So
it
always does.
So he had the opportunity to come here, which was great because of COVID, with the virtual, all the schools around the nation, you know, nobody could really commit to going to Florida. And there's another family that trains with Todd that live literally about half a mile from me.
Oh,
And so he came here with the intention of training those two boys plus Margaret. Mm-hmm. And so, he stayed at my house, which was fun. The goal was for Margaret to hit with him 4 hours a day.
Wow.
And so there would be 2 hours of drill training and then 2 hours of match play. Mm-hmm. So there was definitely the 2 hours of the drill training that I told you, and I'll talk about that a little bit. And then the match play, there's plenty of kids that we know in Louisville that are Margaret's level that can come hit with her. So we would invite kids over and Pierre would coach Margaret and Matt.
Oh, nice.
Which was very nice. I mean, that was amazing. Also, during the month of September, we had two local tournaments. One was the state closed because usually it's Memorial Day, but it had been rescheduled. And then he went down to the Southern Level 1 with us in Rome, Georgia, at the end of his time here, which was October 3rd, and that had been rescheduled for the third time. So he got to participate in tournaments with Margaret and then go to our highest level tournament down in Rome. Mm-hmm. So that was unbelievable. Okay. That was, for me, that was unbelievable. It took so much pressure off me,
Did you go too, or did you just center with Pierre?
No, because I mean, the hotel rooms, you know, Yeah. She's too young to stay in a hotel room by herself. So
yeah,
I'm going to always have to go with her, and that's fine. I mean, she likes it. Like, we like it, but so anyway, back to, okay. So the 2 hours of drill training, she had gotten to a point where they weren't having to focus on forehands and backhands, you know? So the whole drill thing has expanded to inside out forehands, inside in forehands, backhand down the line, backhand or backhand slice down the line, backhand slice, you know, short angles. So the drills have become more complicated and more advanced, which is awesome. You know, he also is, you know, was working on her with some more high level, like the high bouncing balls to the backhand and how to handle those and all the different ways you can handle those. So just to say, you know, when we went there in February, they worked on basically forehands and backhands, and it's now evolved into quite a game for her to develop.
So it sounds like they fixed the grip issues, they fixed the basics.
Yes.
During that first block, and then maybe during those FaceTime calls at the beginning of COVID. Yes. And then that allowed her to make the jump to the next level of development,
yes.
You know, because it's a path, right? Mm-hmm. So now she is in that place where she's starting to work a little more on tactics and working on specific types of spin. And
there's no doubt. I mean,
but you can't do that if the basics aren't solid, which is what y'all were finding, and which was where the frustration was stemming from for her, I'm sure, and certainly for you, because you're sitting there watching this saying, I don't understand.
Yeah.
I spent all this time and money on lessons and going to these drills and these tournaments. And I mean,
they now do pattern drills. Like, they'll do 2-shot pattern drills and 4-shot pattern drills. Mm-hmm. So the 2-shot, and it's always with either starting with a serve or a return. And, we don't have that here in Louisville. The coaches don't do this stuff. And it's so basic. It's so common sense. So, I mean, I could talk all night about this.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that has happened to tennis instruction, especially here in the States, is there's so many teaching pros out there and they're trying to differentiate themselves. And so some of them feel like, you know, I have to make it complex and I have to make people feel like they can't do this without me. And the reality is, if you go to a pro tournament and you watch the pros on their off days on the practice courts, the stuff they're doing on the practice court is exactly what you're talking about, Polly. They're, you know, hitting cross court forehands and then cross court backhands and then slices. You know, it's the basics that they're honing and drilling over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and so in the tournaments, he saw patterns with Margaret. She would play tight. First round, play tight. Second round, play amazing. Third round, probably play tight again. And that happened in every tournament. There were 3 tournaments he watched. He got, you know, the first, the state closed, that was a whole scene. We need to do another podcast on it. And she basically played her best friend, who's coached by her ex-coach. There was a whole crowd that was cheering for her best friend, and she was all alone. It's tennis, you know, that happens. And, and she ended up losing in a tight score match and was upset. Came home that night. We were all talking. She basically said she wants to go down to Florida for the winter. How is she going to do that? Todd actually she's going to go stay with him come Halloween for 3 weeks. She's going to stay at his house with him and his wife and his kids and train with Pierre and do virtual school. Mm-hmm. So we're trying that out. I'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
I know. But just like, she's all on board with it now. Whenever she loses, I feel like it's like, she's like, okay, I've got to figure this out. You know, I've got to get, that match was a big turning point for her. And just seeing how toxic this scene is here in Louisville, which I think it's like this in a lot of places.
It is.
I hear from her parents, you know? And so he's seeing a lot of the mental patterns, which have not been conquered by any means. Her results are still mediocre, which we're not worried about. And I'm very confident that with these 2 coaches, I can hand them my kid and she's going to come out in 3 years and she's going to be a great player. I really am. I really am. one of Margaret's things, I'll just say real quick, she is not a pusher. She'll never be accused of being a pusher. She is a very aggressive player, which means a lot of unforced errors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like in her matches, if she's not focusing on the targets and the mental, the concentration that you need to, you know, maintain the technique and the movement, and she's just going all kamikaze on the ball, murdering the ball, she's not going to win the match, period. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's going to take time. It's going to take time, you know, yeah. And I'm convinced because there were a couple matches where she played the way Pierre wanted her to play. He had a stern talk with her. He very stern, this is how you're playing. I don't care if you win or lose. And she went out and played it. And it was insane. It was beautiful. It was mm-hmm. like, I was so inspired. I'm like, this really is going to work. I think it will. It's just going to take time.
Yeah. So. I think there's that moment. I think we all experience as tennis parents, right? And we're like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing this for my yeah. child. Right. And it feels so good when you have that moment of, okay, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster ride though.
Oh my gosh, it is. So, we're down to our last like 4.5 minutes. What advice would you give to the parents listening or watching who are contemplating a coaching move?
Well, I mean, I think you have to like figure out like why you're moving and what your goals are, you know? And for us, it was about the fact that she was not improving. We had tried a lot. We'd tried an academy. We had tried our local coaches here. Really, it was. And that wasn't really working. So once I had found somebody that I liked what they were saying, I decided to get the guts. I had to get the guts to call them. And then I really had to get the guts to take her down there. Mm-hmm. And I look back and I'm really glad that I did. So I kind of went with my gut feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anything logical or, you know, it was just a gut feeling that things weren't going the way that I just knew they weren't going the right way. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I couldn't coach her. I wasn't about to coach her.
Yeah.
So
good move.
I think just like when I saw that there was suddenly 8 kids on a court when I was promised 4 kids, that was huge for me.
Yeah.
And then even if there were 4 kids, that's still not ideal, you know?
Right. Did you ever have a moment when you were planning this trip down to Florida the first time that, you know, what if we get down there and it's very obvious that she's not going to be able to get to the level that she wants to get to? Did you ever have that moment of like, I'm not sure I want to know this information yet? Because I remember having those feelings sometimes.
Yeah. I did. And I even had, there's a family here in Louisville. They had taken their kid down there and he's a much higher level player than Margaret. And I'm friends with the dad. He's so nice. I mean, they're a great family. And he told me, he goes, oh, you're taking Margaret down there? Oh, she's not there yet, Polly. That's a mistake. Mm-hmm. He actually told that to me. And mm-hmm. it almost made me want to take her more. Like, I can't explain it, but I was like, oh, well. Yeah. I've been assured.
I'm sure you, yeah.
I've been assured by the coach that it'll be fine, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I felt like I was, you know, I felt like there was a moment where I'm like, "What the hell am I doing? Like, why am I doing this?"
Yeah.
So, and I was mainly more concerned about Margaret. I wasn't concerned about me. I was concerned about. I didn't want her to be embarrassed. I didn't want her to feel like she was so in over her head that she would quit. That was a big concern of mine. Taking her down to Florida. But I will tell you that as soon as I got there and like I met Todd face to face and I met Pierre face to face, that went away very quickly.
Yeah.
And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I mean, I'm not just trying to say that to market them in any way at all, but I really truly mean that from the bottom of my heart. So,
yeah. And I want to just say neither of us are being paid to promote Todd's Academy. His not an academy because he's very,
it's not
an academy. It's very unique. But he, you know, he does something special down there and he has worked with some kids who have had some great results and have gone on to do things that they set out to do with their tennis. And, you know, he's found a formula that seems to be working. And I think, you know, he and Pierre have such different personalities, right? Todd's Todd's a lot younger than Pierre, and Pierre's more of that European mindset, you know, of, you know, we're out here, it's business, we're doing our work.
We don't talk. No talk.
But once it's done, it's over, and we're finished, and we're not going to revisit it. Todd's, you know, a little more fun and, you know, but it's all business on the court, for sure.
Yeah, no. And he still looks to Pierre, from my impression, he still looked like, you know, when after he did the assessment with Margaret, and then he had Pierre hit with Margaret, and he said, so what do you think? You think we should train her? And Pierre was like, yeah. Well, what Pierre liked about Margaret was her effort. Mm. You know, he knew she had a lot of work to do, but he mainly liked her effort. So, you know, he knew her attitude was really kind of drama, whatever, but I guess he liked her because...
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Polly, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
For everything. By the way, I mean, we wouldn't be where we are without your podcast. So
I really
appreciate everything you've done as well.
And I just stuck Todd's email address up. So if anybody is interested in reaching out to him, it's todd@twtennis.com, or his website is twtennis.com. And you can go on and see what they're doing down in Florida. Polly, all the best.
Thank you.
Good luck to Margaret. Keep me posted. Please tell her that when she's ready to come do a podcast and talk about her training,
I'd love
to chat with her.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
And to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. And we will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.